The NFL Combine is in the books. Me and Mad Mike have our very first mock draft for you listeners. And the New York Yankees are dropping like flies. Let's get the damn show started.
Listen, when Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike grab mics, it's real sports, real talk, on the field or on the court. If it happened in New York, it's covered like a blanket, dog. Interviews are ill, simply up close and personal. Batter up, Lloyd's batting first, set the tone. Mike's either at the stadium or the garden on the phone. Here we go, Giants and Jets, Yankees and Mets, Knicks and Nets. This is only an intro, the show is next.
Hey, yo, and please pardon my breath as we bring you all new episode of Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk Show. Listeners, today is Monday, March 2nd, 2020. Yes, March is upon us, and this show airs every Monday from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, CastBox, TuneIn, Google Play, Pocket Cast. Be sure to hit that subscribe button so you won't miss a damn thing. And if you got any questions that you'd like for me and Mad Mike to answer on the show when we have time, you go to always shoot them through email to Lloyd@partmyfresh.com. You can send them directly to the website, or you can send them to our media handling on Twitter and Instagram, Lloyd A. Thompson, one word, LLOYD. Be sure to hit that follow button because we keep tabs on what's going on there as well. Listeners, great show for you today. We're going to talk to NFL Combine, who me and Mad Mike thought did pretty good. We're going to have our very first NFL mock draft. We're going to do the first 15 picks of the NFL draft. You get an idea of who we think the NFL teams are going to take and so forth. And we got to talk New York Yankees, as the New York Yankees are dropping like flies. And Mad Mike was telling me that the Yankees just hired a new training staff. So what in the hell is going on? We're going to touch up on that as well. So listeners, as always, let's buckle up, sit back in my lap, and start spreading the news. Hey, yo, let's get it.
How sweet it is. It's Monday. That means the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Show is back. Let's go.
As always, we got to find out where the Mad Mike is and where he's calling from. Yo, Mad Mike, where you at today, baby?
Lloyd, I'm actually trying to make it back local to celebrate my wife's birthday. Listeners, Lloyd, wish me the best of luck, because if I don't make it back home, there's no show next week.
Listen, first off, a happy birthday to the missus, love and blessings for myself, and I'm sure for all our listeners as well. I hope she has a precious day, and I'm sure you get back, man, Mike. We don't want to miss you. You know, you're an integral part of the show, so you need you here, brother. Put on them jetpacks. Do something. Do what you got to do, but get there. Got to keep the missus happy. Got to keep her happy. But with that being said, man, Mike, the NFL Combine took place over the weekend, okay? And speed continues to be all the rage at the NFL, at the Combine, man, Mike. And on Sunday, it was a defensive player put him on a track meet. Listen, man, this kid, linebacker Isaiah Simmons, who I feel is the Giants should target, he was Mr. Everything at Clemson. He completed the 40-yard dash, listeners, in 4.39 seconds, okay? And that's matching the time put up by the fastest running back at the Combine. And Jonathan Taylor and the fastest, listen, Jonathan Taylor is faster than all but six receivers. A linebacker faster than all but six receivers. This kid is 238 pounds, and I think that he likely cemented himself as a top 10 pick in this upcoming draft. And how fast is Simmons? And he opted to take the second attempt. All right. The only other two linebackers that ran sub-4.5, Willie Gay Jr. out of Mississippi State, he posted a 4.46, and Javion Taylor of Colorado posted a 4.49. Listen to what I'm telling you, listeners. We have linebackers running 4.4 now. Linebackers.
I mean, to be fair to him, he's a linebacker because he opened up with the linebackers, and this is where I'll tell you. First of all, I think he cemented himself as a top six, a top seven pick. I don't even think he's gonna. I kind of always had him going to Jacksonville anyway, but next to Miles Jack, who if you recall was also a do everything kind of guy. But this kid is not just a linebacker. This kid is actually a safety. He's a nickel guy. He's kind of like the Minka Fitzpatrick, Tyrann Mathieu kind of guy. But you know, if you list him as a linebacker and he runs with the linebackers, he blows you away. And now I'm not saying there's nothing there. We saw Minka Fitzpatrick be MVP caliber this year. We saw the difference Tyrann Mathieu makes winning a Super Bowl. But what I'm saying is, if he ran with the safeties, the DBs, and he ran with some of the other positions he's going to play, we might not be going so crazy. But because he ran with the linebackers, we're like, wow. Now
here's the thing. But just to get your response on this, while you're talking about him and him running, you know, him more or less running with the DBs and safeties, do you think he's too light in the butt, so to speak, to be an NFL linebacker, and his position in the NFL will be a safety?
Well, you're talking to a guy who said it was always a mistake to draft Darren Lee for that reason exactly. I think that in the NFL, I think Isaiah Simmons is super talented, but I don't think he's going to be a middle linebacker who you're going to be able to play there on every down. Like, he's not going to be able to play every first and second down at linebacker, because when teams are running the ball and they get to that second level, he's not going to be able to shed blocks. You know what I mean? Like, that's just – being positionless used to be a bad thing. Being positionless now is a great thing for him. No, I to answer your question, I do think he's going to be a little bit too light in the butt to be a linebacker full-time in the NFL. But if you can find other ways to use him, then why not?
What if not so much middle linebacker, but maybe weak side linebacker, where that linebacker usually has to cover tight ends more so than anything else? I mean, he might be solid enough, you know, to shed. You know, look, what happens when you have a 300-something-plus, you know, offensive lineman coming around that corner to take you out is one thing. I agree with you. He might he's too light in the butt to probably play middle.
Well,
but he might be able to get away with playing weak side linebacker in the NFL, Matt Mike.
Well, I'll ask you this, and you're more from the player role, but listen, do you draft weak side linebackers in the top 10? No, you draft.
No, you don't.
You draft Mike, right?
Yeah, 1,000%.
That's what I'm speaking on. Like, the fact that he's good. He's going to end up in the top 10. And I've always said that. I've always thought he wouldn't make it past 8 in this draft. But in my opinion, man, I see a guy that I'm not calling. He's better than Darren Lee. He's better than Darren Lee. But I think he's going to end up, like you just said, in that role of weak side cover. Jamal Adams, for example. I think Jamal Adams, the Jets should mess around and he should play some of his snaps at linebacker.
I agree with
you. He's so stout in the run. But at the same time, Jamal Adams is a missile. You know, he sees ball and he locates, as Saquon Barkley found out, and he detonates on impact. I don't know that's Isaiah Simmons in that sense of it. But I think he's super skilled and super amazing as an athlete.
And look, there were three defensive linemen that finished the 40 with under 4.7. I mean, James Smith Williams of North Carolina, he ran a 4.6. Jabari Zuniga of Florida, he was clocked at a 4.64. And Alton Robinson of Syracuse posted a 4.69. And again, I keep on saying how amazing it is and how much that, you know, that aspect of the NFL has shifted. Remember back in the day, man, Mike, your defensive linemen and your linebackers weren't running that fast. They weren't. And get this, the bigger linemen in the combine were even more impressive. One guy weighed in at 308 pounds, Khalil Davis of Nebraska. He ran a 4.7. Then you have 304-pound Neville Gallimore, the second Canadian to play at Oklahoma. He ran a 4.79. And Davis also, he posted the second best bench press among defensive linemen, completing 32 reps at 225. That's impressive. I warm up on 225. I could probably push out, I mean, we lift together. You know, we can probably push out 20. 33 is impressive. 32, 33 is impressive.
Yeah, it is.
And offensive linemen, you know, they hold your top three spots through the first 3 days of the workout. But there were two potential first-round linebackers listed that appeared to suffer setbacks after running well. All right?
Yeah, AJ Epenesa was.
Yeah, Patrick Queen of LSU, he pulled up on his second attempt. You know, what appeared to be a hamstring injury.
I was going to say Patrick Queen pulled his hammy running the 40, but Patrick Queen is just turning on the tape, man. You got a first-round linebacker just turning on tape. The fact that he got hurt, I wouldn't knock him with it.
Yeah, and Kenneth Murray of Oklahoma, he stopped on his second one after clocking a 4.52. And it appears that he may have hurt his hamstring as well.
And to that, I'll say this, man. Do you think that we're putting an overemphasis on 40-yard dashes? Like, kids should not. You know what I mean? Like, these kids still got to work out. They still have pro days. Are we, you know, they weren't the only ones. Henry Ruggs, who was anticipated he might possibly break the 40-yard, John Ross's time record, rather, he came up with a quad injury. You know what I mean? Like, and now you're talking about a kid who's supposed to be a top, 18 pick, top 20 pick in this year's draft. How long is he going to be on the shelf before his pro day, you know, because of this injury? So I don't know, man. Like, we know who's fast and who's not fast. So all you got to do is turn on the tape to see it. Now, it works because you got a guy like Mekhi Becton. At his weight, run a 5.1 and absolutely blow everybody away. I see how this works. Or Tristan Wirfs, who you know, absolutely dominated the competition. But to me, if guys are getting injured in these events and they're overtraining for these events, I don't know that it's worth it anymore.
Well, yeah. Let me also, how often does an NFL player really reach his top speed? Unless they're unless they're breaking through a punt return or a kickoff return, or they got to run a fly down the field, you know, I mean, you can run as fast as lightning, but if you can't catch the damn ball, what difference does it make? If you don't run crisp routes, what difference does it make?
Yeah,
the 10 years that I played semi-pro football, I mean, I wasn't a turtle, but because I ran routes really well, I ran really good routes. It made me faster than what I really was. And guys that were faster than me on the defensive side of the ball, they weren't able to cover me because I ran good routes. So I agree.
Yeah.
I agree with Matt Mike says, you know, they're putting too much emphasis on, you know, one of the dumbest things that they do, Matt Mike, is the one where they leap. Like a leapfrog. You know, when they stand in place and they like, what the hell is that? What is that for? What the hell is that for? Exactly. What the hell is that for?
I was just reading about how that's used to determine, like, your short, like your burst and agility in short spaces, but you know, I don't know. I can't tell you.
By jumping? What the hell?
When was the last time you saw somebody stop on both feet stay stationary and then jump in the middle of a football
and then
game.
Start running again. You know what I'm saying?
Like,
and these guys they try to jump as far as they can, so even when they land, they don't have no momentum moving forward anyway. That is, to me, that's one of the dumbest things that they have these young men do in a combine. Obviously, you know, the drills where they run the routes and, you know, the cones and all that stuff. Yeah, okay. I can see that. I can see that. You know, but again, these kids, you know, they're out there trying to get an NFL contract, so they're going to push themselves. And like you said, the kid from LSU, you know, he might be a first-round talent to begin with. And hamstrings are so difficult, man. They're so difficult. So that's such a difficult injury. And what I mean by difficult, listen, is that you can re-aggravate a hamstring in a blink of an eye.
Yeah, I mean, no, you stop. A hamstring injury stops everything. It absolutely stops everything. Because, I mean, you can pull a hamstring bench pressing. People don't know that. Hamstring it's over. It's done.
Yeah.
And then you know, for a league that's like, he was out of shape, makes us question if he loves football. I don't know, man. I look at everything and, but at the same time, you got to think about it. You got a guy like, you know, AJ Epenesa, who a lot of people think that he could have been a top 15 talent, but a lot of the knock on him has been his athleticism. You know, they just don't know if he's athletic enough to be a top pick in the NFL, to be a difference maker. And he came out and he didn't test well at all. Tested bad. Like, not even well, just bad. He was slow. I mean, he ran a 5.4, 40. You know, his three cone was terrible. Like, it's crazy. You're supposed to be an elite edge rusher, and they're like, "Well, turn on the tape, and you'll see one." But you know one thing about college football, and you know one thing about the NFL. Everyone that plays in the NFL belongs in the NFL, unless you're a backup quarterback for the New York Jets. You know what I mean? And in college, they're playing against a lot of guys that don't belong in the NFL. So I don't know what he is. But if you're telling me that this guy is not athletic enough, you think he's going to struggle beating stronger linemen, you think that he's not going to be able to get around the corner, then I ask you, do you really have an elite pass rusher?
Yeah, no, you don't.
So at that point, I hate the drills, but I understand the need for the drills for some people. I just don't know how we can go about being more efficient. Like, Henry Ruggs shouldn't have to run the 40. Henry Ruggs runs the 40 because they want to sell TV ads and get viewers to watch the NFL draft combine. AJ Epenesa runs the 40 because he has to. It's two totally different, you know what I mean? Like I don't know how else to say it. I mean, whatever. I just watch it now, but we know it's smoke and mirrors.
Listeners, we're going to do our mock draft the second half of the show, but, you know, I agree with Mad Mike, man. They need to come up with a different way to, you know, but again.
They did. If you saw, they had the toe tap drill for the wide receivers this year, which makes sense, right? Because college kids.
Right, those drills make sense. Those drills make sense.
In college, you don't have to get 2 feet down. You have to get 1 foot down. So in my head, I'm like, well, why don't we make this a drill and see if these guys are actually working on it? So when it comes draft time and it comes, you know, camp time, I don't have to teach this kid how to catch a pass and get both feet in at the same time. You know what I mean? That makes sense to me. Because if a guy can't do it at the combine, are you drafting him with the first round? With a first round pick so high? Maybe not, because all of a sudden this guy, he's more raw than he is refined, right? If you're you know, the DBs, do you have a
come up with a workout where, you know, how many times have you seen a college, you saw it this year with your kid, DeAndre Baker. Does he get his head turned around? No. You know, look at the Jets guy, Darrell Robertson, who still doesn't turn his head around since college. Make that a drill. Can you turn around, locate the ball without creating pass interference? How many cornerbacks would drop out of the first round or second or third round or even the draft if they saw they couldn't do it?
Yeah.
Those are the kind of drills that they should be running. Actual football plays, actual football drills.
And it's amazing that at this point they don't have the natural instinct to do that. I was taught that when I played high school football.
The thing is, in college, you don't have to turn back around to locate the ball. So either, and I get it. All right, so either college should change their game, or the NFL should change their workouts to identify exactly that, who can't do it. You know what I mean? Like, it's just there's not a lot of LSUs, Alabamas, where they're teaching pro style defenses, where you're. Actually, you know you can draft guys. Guys are going to come into the league doing those things. You know what I mean? It's I don't know, man. I that's what I was thinking about when I'm looking at the you know, leaping drills and this and that. And I'm like, why are we not doing more football drills?
Listen, let me.
Why
tell
are we
you
not
this,
doing
this.
More nutcrackers and stuff like that?
If it wasn't for me having to watch that in the combine. So I can report it to you on this very show. I wouldn't have watched it. I wouldn't have watched it. Wonder why? The only reason why I watched it is so I can give you insight as to what I'm seeing or what I've seen from the NFL Combine. And if it wasn't for that, I wouldn't have watched. I would have no interest in it at all. None.
Not only that, but man, I don't know if it should be optional. Like, how many, the thing is,
well,
how
you
many
know,
guys
you do have
the
top guys don't participate in it. Like, Chase Young wasn't in it. Tua didn't run. Obviously, he's not recovering from his injury, I don't think. He didn't participate in it.
Well, see, this is, yeah, well, his hip, he's got a bad hip. He just actually got clearance. He's not even fully cleared to fully, run all the drills. So I don't bother with him, but, look, man, like you get a guy like Chase Young who's like, yeah, I'm not, I know I'm guaranteed a top three draft pick. And Joe Burrow, I'm guaranteed a top one draft pick. I'm not going to participate. Well, if those guys don't participate, how do you have a standard of who you can hold up other guys to? What if Chase Young ran 4.99, right? And then, you have, AJ Epinesa, who I'm knocking, ran a 5.04. All of a sudden, Epinesa doesn't look all that bad, right?
No, you're right. And, you know, the reason why they don't do that is because it may hurt their draft stock. If
Correct.
They come in at a low time.
Correct. Because now all of a sudden, and I'm not questioning Chase Young. I think Chase Young is great. I think he loves football. He's been great for a long time. But, you know, I look at that and I'm like, it's, you know, we live in a world of, you know, it's so unfair. You know, we live in a world of everything is, it's not created equal and this one's right. And at the end of the day, look, if somebody is looking for a job, right? If me and you go to the same company, do we not go through the same hiring process? Do we not go through the same interviews? Do we not go through the same everything, orientations and all that, right? So why do we say in the NFL, if you're better than this one, you don't have to? In what world is that right? Like Joe Burrow, all people, I'm like, you know what, man? You've been making all these waves, got all these people saying you don't want to play in Cincinnati. You're hurting my business already. You're already coming in, got people doubting, and you're feeding all this skepticism. You're already hurting my business, and now you're not going to participate? What world is that fair? Not only that, but you're the number one pick, and then you got guys like Justin Herbert, Love, and you know some other guys that are trying to crack the top 10. Well, make him participate, because if I test
so much closer to the number one overall pick. And you turn on my tape and you see somebody that you think has potential to be the number one overall pick, all of a sudden, you muddy the waters. All of a sudden, you don't know. You know what I mean? If you're helping my career, I might not fall by the wayside because now everyone sees that, hey, Joe Burrow is this, and Justin Herbert is right behind them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, let's take a quick commercial break. Mad Mike, when we come back, we're going to start our mock draft, our first, very first mock draft from the NFL. And then we're going to talk a little bit of Yankee baseball again with these dudes dropping like flies. So we'll be right back with more of the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk Show.
Welcome back to the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk Show. Listeners, the first half of the show, we covered the NFL Combine, and we spoke about some of the drills necessary or not necessary and what they should do, and how these young men sometimes are, you know, hurting themselves trying to perform the best that they can possibly perform for these NFL teams. Okay, but now that brings us to our very first mock draft. Okay, and we're not going to do the all 32 NFL teams. We're just going to do enough so we can get Mad Mike's team in there, the New York Jets. So we can give our picks for the New York Jets, all right? And not for nothing, we're 2 months away, you know, from the NFL draft. And maybe you don't want to read too much into the combine, but people do read a lot into the combine. And with that being said, that brings us to our first mock draft. And the Cincinnati Bengals have the first pick, Mad Mike. Okay, and I got the Cincinnati Bengals taking Joe Burrow, quarterback from LSU. And the whole Joe Burrow may not want to play in Cincinnati narrative has been put to rest. We can finally start talking about what matters, in my opinion, and how the Bengals are going to tailor the offense to play the Burrow script. And I might want to start, you know, asking for LSU's playbook. Look, this kid may not pan out to be anything in the NFL. All right, and they got to draft him a receiver. If AJ Green leaves. I mean, that's not a bad person.
I believe they announced AJ Green was getting franchise tagged.
Okay, so AJ Green. So he'll have AJ Green, but I got Cincinnati taking Justin Burrow.
Me too. I got Burrow going there. He's a difference maker. He oozes confidence, and let's be honest, that's something that the franchise is lacking right now, confidence in any stretch of the organization, from the front office to the coaching staff to the players. So I think he's the perfect guy to go in there and change the whole thinking.
All right, and that brings us to the number two pick that belongs to the Washington Redskins. And I can see Washington trading this pick, now, Mike, you know, for a team that's in favor of a quarterback, but I got them sticking at number two, and I have them taking the young man that I wanted the Giants to pick, and that's Chase Young, defensive end from Ohio State. And I guarantee you, again, we're going to hear rumblings that a mystery team may want to trade up to two and draft Tua, the quarterback from Alabama. And they can come from the Redskins or the Lions, for that matter, in hopes that someone is willing to package a bundle of picks together. All right, but Young could possibly be the best player in the draft. And I got Washington, who needs help everywhere. They need help everywhere on the offense and defensive side of the ball. I got them taking Chase Young, defensive end from Ohio State, man, Mike.
I think Tua can be the pick here. I wouldn't be surprised if Washington even considered Tua the pick here with a new coach who didn't necessarily we don't know what Ron Rivera thinks of Dwayne Haskins. We don't know if he likes him. We don't know if he would have taken him. So I think not only is Tua in play for other teams at two, I think Tua is in play here for the Washington Redskins. And you just can't fault him. If he's healthy, I think he's a better quarterback than Joe Burrow. But I got them taking Chase Young. Chase Young is a one-of-a-kind talent. Ron Rivera, for a lot of years, benefited from having Julius Peppers on the field. And I don't think that they make pass rushers like this. And if you can't start, if you don't have the quarterback building block, then you need a pass rushing building block, as we've seen with, you know, other first-round picks and you know, Myles Garrett most recently. But I think Chase Young is a safe pick here.
I mean, it's crazy. I even heard Mel Kiper say that DeWanston might draft Tua because they're not too keen on Oh man, who's the kid? They don't.
Dwayne Haskins. Yeah, this is why when people call guys bust, I feel for them because Dwayne Haskins he only started 1 year in college, you know what I mean? And he came in and they wanted great things. He didn't have a coach that was 100% invested in him and Jay Gruden. It took a long time. And now you're talking about drafting somebody else. Like, is he a bust or did he just get a raw deal?
Yeah. Fair enough. And that brings us to number three. That pick goes to the Detroit Lions. Who do you have the Lions taking with the number three pick, Matt Mike?
I think that the Lions are going to trade Matt Stafford in this offseason. And I think that this pick is going to be a quarterback. And right now, with all the positive reports on Tua, I think they're going to take Tua.
All right, I got the Lions taking Isaiah Simmons, linebacker from Clemson. I think he's moved with his strong, NFL combine. I think he's bolted his way up to the number three pick. Again, another player that I had the Giants targeting, and I will hope falls to the Giants. But I got Detroit taking him. And if Stafford is cut or traded, the Lions will eat $32 million in dead money. And he carries a $21.3 million cap hit, playing for the Lions next year. And to me, that's a suicide. I've third ahead of Jeff Okuda, but I got Detroit taking Isaiah Simmons.
Yeah, I mean, not for nothing, man. And this is what scares the hell out of me with the New York Giants. The reports are Matt Stafford just hates playing for Matt Patricia. And who's Matt Patricia? Just another New England Bill Belichick wannabe, and it's not playing well in their locker room. And that'll take us to our number four pick. But, don't you see Joe Judge already doing that? Nobody has a role on this team. No, stop it. Saquon Barkley is the starting running back. Daniel Jones is starting quarterback. And, just because of we can list a whole bunch of names, Will Hernandez is your starting guard. Like, shut up and coach your team. There's no reason to do it. That's the reason that I don't say that it would be crazy. Even if you don't want to cut Stafford this year, if Stafford doesn't want to be there this year, he's not going to want to be there next year. So you might as well start looking for his replacement.
All right, that brings us to number four, which is my New York football Giants. Who do you have the Giants take with the number four pick, Matt Mike?
I waffled here, man. I have them taking Mekhi Becton. I think that if you want to talk about hog mollies, he's the biggest lineman in this draft. And after he basically, some of his workouts were off the charts, his 40-yard, his strength, I think that it's a no-brainer for them. You drafted the quarterback, you have to protect the quarterback. If it's not a lineman here, it's Gettleman should be fired, and I'm just taking Gettleman's history of hog mollies and saying I'm going to take the biggest guy, and it's going to be Mekhi Becton.
And then can I just take the dysfunctionalism of this franchise as I'm steadily comparing the New York Giants to the New York Knicks? And I got the Giants drafting Jeff Okuda, cornerback from Ohio State, and the Giants have need on the offensive line, like Matt Mike said, and there's a franchise tackle to be had. Daniel Jones needs protection. But, again, we're talking about the New York Giants, and there's also a massive need in the secondary, a massive need in the linebacker core, and given New York was 31st versus the pass, according to Football Outsiders, and this week Giants released two linebackers. They love to have Simmons fall here, and I would love to have him as well. But, defensively, I think Okuda is the next best option and probably the pick. The Giants might draft a safety from North Dakota State. Who the hell knows?
I like that pick. I like that pick for you, man. I do. But here's the thing. Last year they invested in Julian Love, and they traded picks to move back up to get Baker. Can you really afford to take another cornerback fourth overall after that? This has got to be something where you're, I don't know, man. I'm looking at it and I'm saying there's no way you can pass up. You're talking about a left tackle that's going to grow with your quarterback for the next 10, 15 years. How can you pass that up?
Well, again, man, we're talking about the New York Giants. So, yeah. And that moves us to number 5, which belongs to the Miami Dolphins. I got the Dolphins taking Justin Herbert here, quarterback out of Oregon. Herbert remains, you know, a divisive figure in this draft, and the lazy comparisons to Josh Allen just, I don't think, are accurate. And he really took over, you know, a huge game in his career using his arm. But is that because of what the Ducks wanted to do on offense? And I think his ceiling could be potential comparison to Ben Roethlisberger. At one point, I had the Dolphins taking Tua here, but I think they may go with Justin Herbert. So I have them taking Justin Herbert at number 5.
Yeah, I haven't taken Justin Herbert at number 5. I'll say this, though. I don't feel good about this pick. If you're a guy that thinks that Justin Herbert needs time to come in and learn, let's be honest. I've seen it happen myself with Ryan Fitzpatrick. Ryan Fitzpatrick is not, you know, if all reports were to believe when he was here in New York, he's not the best of teachers. He has no interest in helping the young kids learn. He's interested in playing. As far as he's competing, he's not helping his competition beat him. He's on record of saying that. So I put Justin Herbert there simply because at some point Miami's going to have to make a move for a quarterback. But I'm be honest with you, I don't feel comfortable putting Herbert here with Ryan Fitzpatrick as a quarterback. But I'm putting him there.
All right, so that moves up on to number 6, and that pick belongs to the Los Angeles Chargers. I got the Chargers taking Andrew Thomas, offensive tackle out of Georgia. And with Phillips officially gone, everyone has the Chargers going quarterback. I think I'm going another direction. The durability Rivers possessed, you know, I think that flies in the face of the off-injured Tua, okay? Coach Anthony Lynn must have a winning season, in my opinion, all right? And the guess here is that the Chargers land a big free agent and draft a quarterback in another round. So I got them taking Andrew Thomas, offensive tackle from Georgia.
I thought about that as well, Lloyd. The only reason I'm not drafting, one, I think that they're going to go quarterback. I think they're going to end up trading up. So this was a hard pick for me to actually mock to them. And at the same time, I don't think they're going to take an offensive tackle because they don't have a quarterback. They don't have Phillip Rivers. And I think until they figure that part of it, they're not going to waste such a high pick, on the offensive line. But I have them taking in this mock draft, I have them taking, Derrick Brown, defensive tackle from Auburn. I just think that, he's Aaron Donald-like. I think he's special on the inside of the defensive line. And if you have Melvin Ingram and you have Joey Bosa coming from the outside and you're gonna chip and double them, this kid is gonna end up as an interior defensive lineman, with 13, 14 sacks a year. You know, he was double teamed in Auburn for much of his career. That's why his sack numbers are down. He's that special. But I'm telling you right now, man, if they don't double team those guys, he's going to force them to double team him, and Joey Bosa and Melvin Ingram are going to eat all day, just for the sake of, not being able to, you know, mock trades. I have him going there. Otherwise, I think they're taking quarterback.
All right. So that pushes us to number 7, and that pick belongs to the Carolina Panthers. Who you have the Panthers taking at number 7, man, Mike?
Here I have them taking Isaiah Simmons. They lost Luke Kuechly this offseason to retirement, and I think Isaiah Simmons is just the right kind of guy for a coach to build his defense around as a Swiss Army knife, part of the defense type.
Like I said, I think he might be too light at linebacker full time, but you have to find a way to replace Luke Kuechly. You got to find a way to replace the heart of your defense. I think Isaiah Simmons, especially with the way he performed in this combine, he's, like I said, I think he cemented himself as a top eight pick, and I have him going to Carolina.
All right. I have the Carolina Panthers taking Derrick Brown, defensive tackle out of Auburn, and 1 week Cam Newton is certainly going to be traded. Possibly the next week, it looks like he's staying. All right. Either way, I don't see the Panthers going quarterback here. I still believe the smart move for the Panthers is to move on and start to rebuild things, in my opinion. All right. They're 2-14, and they could possibly land Trevor Lawrence in the long run. And that's best for Matt Rule for now. Rebuild that once great defensive line, and I think you start to do that with the 6'4", 325-pound Derrick Brown, man, Mike. So I got the Panthers taking Derrick Brown with 7, and that moves us to number 8. And that pick belongs to the Arizona Cardinals. Who do you have the Cardinals taking with their 8th pick in the NFL draft, man, Mike?
I think they take CeeDee Lamb. I think that I don't think that this is a very hard thing to do. CeeDee Lamb was the number one receiver in college alongside Marquise Brown when Kyler Murray was a quarterback at Oklahoma. And I think that they don't miss the opportunity here to get their number one wide receiver to pair with their quarterback for the long term, especially in an offense. You know, he gives them the ability to run an offense that Cliff Kingsbury wants, you know, explosive, exciting. And listen, I'd say that they should go offensive lineman, but it's clear that I don't know that an offensive lineman is as big of a deal in this offensive system because of how fast they want to move and how mobile they want to move. They want their guys to be all around the pocket. So I think they're comfortable with a money pocket and Kyler breaking out. So for here, I'm going CeeDee Lamb.
All right, I got the Arizona Cardinals taking Jedrick Willis Jedrick Wills, listeners, offensive tackle from Alabama. And Kyler Murray's, you know, in a win-win situation. He's either going to ask for a receiver, he knows best, former teammate CeeDee Lamb, or get an offensive lineman to protect him. And he got sacked at NFL high 48 times in the 2019 season, man, Mike. So I have them taking Jedrick Wills, offensive tackle from Alabama with the number 8 pick. And that moves us to 9, which belongs to the Jacksonville Jaguars. I got them, the Jacksonville Jaguars, taking Javon Kinlaw, defensive tackle from South Carolina. I might be the only one who saw Kinlaw in the top 20 a few months, you know, but, and, you know, in this mediocre defensive tackle draft, in my opinion, Kinlaw is going to be a high-impact player for a franchise very quickly. So I have them taking Javon Kinlaw, defensive tackle from South Carolina, with the 9th pick.
Yeah, their biggest need is defensive tackle. I was going to put AJ Epinesa here because they have an opportunity to lose the Yannick Ngakoue this offseason, and he'd be a perfect replacement if you want to save some money. But he tested so poorly, and with Derrick Brown coming off the board already for me, I'm just going to give them – you have to be able to protect your quarterback. I mean, Nick Foles took, you know, big time hits this year and I don't know what they're going to do if they're going to move away from him, but any which way you go, they're going to have to, protect their quarterback. So, and they're going to have to be able to, you know, kind of open up some holes and start to rebuild that line in front of, you know, Leonard Fournette if he's going to get paid his massive contract. So I went with Jedrick Wills here. I don't like the pick, but at the same time, I just think it's a little too early for Javon Kinlaw to go. That things can change, obviously, after his pro day. But for the moment, with Epinesa falling out because of his workouts and me just thinking it's too early for him, I went with Wills.
All right, so that takes us to number 10, which belongs to the Cleveland Browns. And I got the Cleveland Browns taking Austin Jackson, offensive lineman from USC. And the Browns are going to be fascinating to watch in free agency because they can shape the draft decisions, breaking up their highly paid receiving core and improving the offensive line. And I can put them in line to do something that few expect on draft day. Again, me and Mad Mike talked about Odell Beckham Jr. possibly going to the New York Jets. You know, the new analytic-based front office, I think that they'll certainly be relying on numbers more than John Dorsey did. So we'll see how the offseason goes. But Jackson may be the most impressive of the offensive linemen in this draft, man, Mike. So I got the Browns taking Austin Jackson with the number 10 pick.
I have the Browns taking Tristan Wirfs with the number 10 pick, the most athletic offensive lineman in the draft. And personally, you heard Baker Mayfield say it. He bulked up last year. He feels like it hurt his game. He wants to get lighter on his feet. He wants to be able to move around a lot more. And the way Tristan Wirfs, you know, super athlete, moved around at the, in the draft, I think, you know, I just think perfect opportunity for them to get a guy who can match on the offensive line, who can match the skill and athletic ability of Baker Mayfield. So. Especially the fact that Baker Mayfield is always going to be too short. So I don't know if a traditional lineman is going to benefit him. I think he's always going to have to be on the move to open up throwing lanes. And I think Tristan Wirfs is the perfect complement to Baker Mayfield.
All right. So that brings us to the 11th pick, which belongs to the Jets. Matt Mike, who do you have your beloved team taking with the number 11th pick? And this year's draft.
Oh, I think it's going to be Andrew Thomas. I think Andrew Thomas. I think Andrew Thomas is arguably the best lineman in this draft. I think that what happens in this whole process, and I've said it about a lot of people. Andrew Thomas was by all accounts the number one lineman going into the college season. He didn't do anything to lose that spot. As much as these guys just, you know, kind of played better than people anticipated they were going to be. And then you spend all this time telling everybody all his faults, warts, and why he shouldn't be the best player at his position in this draft. And then you tend to start believing it. So I think that people are starting to believe that, and the Jets are going to benefit from you know, just bad evaluations of Andrew Thomas. And they get the best offensive lineman in this draft, fall to them at 11. And it's about time that they're able to, you know, if they can't land Jack Conklin, then you can bring back Kelvin Beachum and move Kelvin Beachum to right tackle and start rebuilding this line and finally give Sam Darnold a fighting chance.
I got the Jets taking a lineman as well, but I don't have them taking a lineman you pick, Matt Mike. I have them taking Mekhi Becton, offensive lineman from Louisville. And if you're looking for a fast rising name based on the NFL combine, you know, he's a mountain of a tackle. You know, he starred for Louisville, and it's a good place to start. He checked in at 6'7", 364, and he has the fourth longest arm length of any tackle. Now, how he performs in drills could push him even higher in the draft, but I have them taking Mekhi Becton, number 11, offensive lineman from Louisville. And that pushes us to number 12, which belongs to the Las Vegas Raiders. Yes, the Las Vegas Raiders. They're going to be called no longer the Oakland Raiders. Who do you have the Las Vegas Raiders taking with the number 12 pick, man, Mike?
I have them taking Javon Kinlaw, defensive tackle. I mean, I wanted to put a wide receiver here, but at the same time, I just think that it's probably going to be wide receiver. But they don't even know who their quarterback's going to be. They don't know if they want to commit to Derek Carr yet or – you know, I hear a lot of Tom Brady rumors are real. But, you know, they spent a lot of time on the pass rush last draft. They hit on some guys. And, you know, I think a big-time defensive tackle will open that up for them, kind of like I did for the Chargers. So I haven't taken Javon Kinlaw here.
All right, now, speaking of quarterback, you mentioned that they don't know what direction they're going to go in. That's exactly what I have the Las Vegas Raiders taking. I have them taking a quarterback, and I have them taking Tua Tagovailoa. Well, I can never get this young man's last name right. But I have them taking Tua, the quarterback from Alabama, Sam Bradford, Josh Rosen, Carson Wentz. If you go back a decade, quarterbacks who were injured in college more than once had historically got into the NFL, all right? And the talent is undeniably there for Tua. The injury concerns are real. You know, but a coach with a 10-year contract has nothing to lose. 10-year contract. I got them taking Tua with the number 12 pick. And that pushes us to number 13. And the 13th pick belongs to the Indianapolis Colts. I have them taking Jerry Jeudy, wide receiver from Alabama. The Jeudy Lamb debate will rage on until both are off the board. But I gave the slight lean to Jeudy falling to the Colts to pair him with T.Y. Hilton. And I think that would be a formidable tandem in the AFC, of course. They need to figure out their quarterback situation through free agency. But I have them taking Jerry Jeudy, wide receiver from Alabama.
Me too. With all the rumors that broke, I don't want to call them certainties because it's only March 2nd. But with all the certainties that Phillip Rivers is going there to pair Jerry Jeudy with T.Y. Hilton, it's kind of like Andrew Luck coming into the league and the Colts at that time pairing T.Y. Hilton with, Reggie Wayne. You know, to help break in that duo. So I can see I have Jerry Jeudy going there. I'm predicting Phillip Rivers is going to end up there as well, and that's just craziness.
All right, so there you have it. So that brings us to number 14, and that pick belongs to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I have the Buccaneers taking C.J. Henderson, defensive back from Florida. And listen, we're going to do another mock draft before the draft, but I can promise you somebody's going to have to move heaven and earth to get me off the secondary player to the Bucs because they need help in a worse way. So I got them taking C.J. Henderson, defensive back from Florida, with the 14th pick.
I've kind of gone back and forth on this one as well. I do think that they need some secondary help, and I've really, really considered Trayvon Diggs here, but we know that they're going to lose Shaq Barrett in free agency, and they're going to need some outside linebacking help. So I got Calavon Chase coming from LSU there. And I think that it'll work because I believe that they drafted a young man, middle linebacker, Pro Bowl type player from LSU last year. And to get his running mate outside of him, alongside him rather, can make that defense special. So I have them taking Calavon Chase on.
All right, so that brings us to the last pick in our first mock draft, listeners. Again, we're going to do another one. It'll probably take a whole show to do all 32 picks, but we're going to top off with 15 on this show, and that brings us to the 15th pick, which belongs to the Denver Broncos. Who do you have the Denver Broncos taking with the 15th pick, man, Mike?
I have them taking Trayvon Diggs. They're set to lose Chris Harris, their longtime cornerback. And while a lot of people are saying that, you know, you probably want to focus on the offensive line, protect the quarterback, Drew Lock a little bit better, or even get Drew Lock some additional weapons. I just think that Courtland Sutton at the moment has established himself as a legit number one, wide receiver in this league. So, I didn't go Henry Ruggs there, and I just thought it's too easy to replace. It's not easy to replace cornerbacks, as you showed us with the Giants picking your mock draft of going back-to-back first-round cornerbacks. I think they go Trayvon Diggs here and try to kind of solidify their outside defensive back chart, and, you know, that'll allow Von Miller and Bradley Chubb to keep producing in the pass rush.
All right, so you mentioned weapons, and with that being said, I have the Denver Broncos taking Henry Ruggs III, wide receiver from Alabama. Listen, I had him in the 20 to 25 range for over a month, but I've fallen in love with this young man's speed, like I'm pretty sure a bunch of others have. Again, speed doesn't, you know, constitute
greatness. No, he's legit. I'm going to tell you, Lord, this kid can run routes with the best of them. He can jump. He can catch with the best of them. I've seen him make defenders fall with his route running, not even using his speed, just his pure footwork. And, you know, he's legit, so I don't blame him.
And just think what a pair he'd be with Courtland Sutton. not a bad tandem right there.
He reminds me, he reminds me of the year the Giants drafted Odell Beckham, where people were just marveled by the athleticism, the speed, his jumping, his leaping ability, everything, like all the combine stuff. No one knew that Odell was the kind of pass catcher that he is. That's who Henry Ruggs kind of reminds me of right now. And the reason people didn't know about him was because people don't realize he played alongside Jarvis Landry. Jarvis Landry was a hell of a receiver himself. And I think if people could redraft Jarvis Landry, he'd probably go in the first round of that draft as well. He wouldn't go in the third round. And I think that Jerry Jeudy kind of hurts, and Irv Smith, from last year. And I think playing with all those weapons hurt his stock. But I think when you find him in an offense, I have him going to Philadelphia. But I think when you find him with the ability to finally stand on his own 2 feet away from those guys, you're going to be like, holy crap. Why wasn't Alabama using this guy more?
And there you have it, listeners. That brings us to the close of our very first mock draft. Again, the next mock draft that we'll do will cover all 32 teams, but it's probably going to take us an entire show to do that, so we wanted to talk about some other things as well. And before we get to Mad Mike's rant for the week, I just want to bring up the New York Yankees and the injuries that...
Mad Mike is not going to have a rant of the week because Mad Mike is going to rant right now when we talk about the Yankees.
All right,
just stay tuned if you want to hear Mad Mike.
He's going to cover it in a rant right now. But before I let him go on his tangent and go on before we close the show out, we're weeks away from the Yankee season opener, and it's already time to break out your next man up t-shirts for the team. All right? And some key Yankees are already out of action following a season in which they placed MLB records 30 players, on the injured list. James Paxton, back surgery. His return is expected late May, early June. All right? Giancarlo Stanton. All right? Strained right calf. Name is a grade one calf strain. All right? He's expected to be back shortly after the season opener. All right? Then you have Aaron Judge. Right shoulder soreness. There's a possibility that he might be back the week of March 2nd. All right? Aaron Hicks. All right, he's rehabbing from Tommy John surgery on his right elbow. He's not expected back to midseason. Luis Severino, partially torn UCL in his right elbow. Out for the entire season. Okay? And then you have Masahiro Tanaka, who's also dealing with a UCL injury. And he's pitching through it. He should have got the surgery done over 2 years ago. And I mentioned
he tore his first year as a Yankee.
And I mentioned that you brought up, Mad Mike, that the Yankees just hired a new training staff. What in the hell is going on? What's going on? And again, real quick, I just want to point out that Giancarlo Stanton has been injured. He played 18 games last year, listeners. Muscles do
not
Giancarlo
Stanton.
Transpire into longevity, man. Mike, look at your NSF for this, who's another bulked up ball player. Can you say Balco?
Yeah,
and this is what happens when you take steroids, it breaks your bodies down. I'm done, man, Mike. You get it on and finish off.
I've always knocked Giancarlo Stanton. If you take away his MVP year, he played 158 games. If you take away his first year as a New York Yankee, where he played 159 games, by the way, he played through a hamstring injury. Because he was, they played him in DH for most part of it. If he had to play in the field that year regularly, he would have not, been, as healthy as he was. But if you take out those two seasons, he averages 127 games played for the season, which means what? That he misses routinely 45. That's 45 games a year he misses. Right now, 10-day DL stint, that's 4.5 DL stints a year. That's the from a $30 million player. Let's be honest. We're still looking at a guy that's proven that he's just not. I'm sorry. It's 118 games he averages. If you 127 games. If you add in those, if you take out last year, we only played 18, and I believe one of the year 2013, he only played in like 13 games or something like that when he got hit in the face. I think it's 100. It's weird, man. It's somewhere between 118 games and 127 games, depending on
those four seasons. It's craziness. But he's just a guy that you can't rely on. It's proven that he's a guy that you can't rely on as far as being on the field. As far as the Yankees go, I'm going to tell you this, man. And I said this, and I got crushed in social media. I got crushed on message boards. But I don't care. People call me, tell me that's the stupidest take I've ever seen. I don't think for one second that these injuries are coincidence, man. I don't. The fact of the matter is Luis Severino and James Paxton needed surgery before pitching an inning in spring training. Those guys came in with torn body parts. That's a fact. Those guys both said they got hurt last October. The New York Yankees, for some reason, thought that rest and rehab was going to help them with these injuries. Then you find out that Luis Severino had a bone spur in his elbow that they knew about. The only reason that you don't go into an offseason during the offseason and clean out a bone spur is if you know that UCL or you feel that UCL is torn. If you go in there and clear the chip and you leave the torn UCL in, you have malpractice suit. They didn't want to be forced to do the Tommy John in the offseason, or they didn't want to be forced to announce he had a torn UCL, which is why he didn't go in for an elbow cleanup. And if you recall, before people call me crazy, the New York Mets refused to do a trade, Zach Wheeler, for Javier Baez for the same reasons. The Mets knew that a physical was going to show Zach Wheeler needed Tommy John surgery, and they didn't want it out there in offseason. So they refused to trade for Javier Baez, who's one of the best defensive second basemen or shortstops in all of baseball right now, for the sake of not outing their player in the offseason. Which, by the way, Zach Wheeler ended up not getting traded, and he ended up having Tommy John in season that very next season. And that's exactly what just happened to the New York Yankees. And I think that it was purposely done, because if you knew that James Paxton required surgery and might not be ready for the season, and if you knew Severino required Tommy John and was going to be out for the whole season, how do you go into the offseason and negotiate a contract, a record-breaking contract with Gerrit Cole already for $324 million? You don't think Gerrit Cole is going to squeeze you even more for more money, maybe $330 million? And all of a sudden, the New York Yankees, what's one more million dollars? Well, one more million dollars in the grand scheme of things. You saw the New York Yankees, they spent no damn money after Gerrit Cole. So, yeah, that $1 million sure as hell does make sense for them. It does mean something to them, right? Not only that, but would the fans be as forgiving if they knew that they weren't going to have Severino and Paxton, and your answer was, I'm going to sign Gerrit Cole knowing I'm going to lose these guys to injury, and I'm going to lose Dellin Betances, and I'm going to use Didi Gregorius? You know what I mean? We wouldn't have been as forgiving. I think that this wasn't a coincidence. I think that they orchestrated this. I think this was a strategic move on their end. And now you're dealing with an Aaron Judge injury. All of a sudden, Aaron Judge's sore shoulder has kept him out 2 weeks. You're telling me with their poor track history that I need to believe that they don't know what's going on with Aaron Judge? Come on, man. We know Aaron Judge played through a shoulder injury 2 years ago. We have no idea to what extent that damage was playing through that. And what do we know about those injuries? Like CeCe, right? CeCe played through the bad knee, and it ruined his career. He played through the bad elbow. He lost his velocity. And now we saw Aaron Judge just 2 years ago play through it. And now what? Now it's popping up again? You want me to believe that that's coincidence? Nah, man, I don't believe anything. I think Brian Cashman is asleep at the wheel, and I think that people need to start paying more attention to what's going on and stop ignoring the facts. When the Yankees are telling you who they are as trainers, the Yankees are telling you what their philosophy is when it comes to player safety and health. Start listening. Aaron Hicks, we knew he tore his UCL. We knew Aaron Hicks needed Tommy John surgery in August of last year. Aaron Hicks rehabbed and played in the playoffs and then had Tommy John surgery after the playoffs. What did he do in the playoffs? He didn't do anything. What did Aaron Hicks do that made you say that we should postpone surgery from August to November? So now he's not available till July. Come on, dude. He should have got this, almost cursed again. He should have got the surgery in August, and he'd be ready for spring training this year. they've been very cavalier and very irresponsible with their injuries, and this is what it's doing. It's taking a window that should have been open for years at a time, and it's closing it quicker than everybody expected. It just is. And I'm going to tell you something. The fact that if we don't know what Aaron Judge's injury is, and we're already saying that Giancarlo Stanton won't be available until hopefully opening day. Hey, there's a guy named Yasiel Puig who's right there, still a free agent, hasn't signed yet. Go sign him up. Don't sell me on Mike Talkman. Don't sell me on this guy and that guy. The fact of the matter is, your left fielder was supposed to be Giancarlo Stanton, IL. Your starting center fielder is who? Aaron Hicks, IL. And your starting right fielder is who? Aaron Judge, and you have no idea what's going on with his shoulder. The fact of the matter is, regardless if Brett Garner came back or not, your starting outfield projected for this year is all not playing right now. Go sign Yasiel Puig.
Listen, I agree, man. And if you don't get a stick out of him, you're showing up get a hell of a defensive outfielder. That's for certain.
And then I'll tell you something else, Lloyd. Let me ask you a question. They didn't do anything to fortify their bullpen. What bullpen help did they bring in? They lost Dylan Betances. What they bring in? Nothing. If you knew you had two starters going in that were facing surgery, why the hell wouldn't you sign more bullpen depth? Why wouldn't you fortify that bullpen? Because you know you're going to need it in the this season coming. You don't know what Jordan Montgomery is. We don't know how he's going to bounce back. We know Jonathan Loaisiga has talent, but we don't know if he can hold up over the course of a whole season. Davey Garcia is 165 pounds. 165 pounds soaking wet. There's only one Pedro Martinez. You know why?
That's who they're putting their eggs in the basket with those guys. Jordan Montgomery, Mike King.
Mike King? Do you know most scouts think Mike King has a ceiling of a number four starter and probably the career trajectory of a reliever? And they keep telling us about Mike King. You know who Mike King is? Chance Adams. How'd that work out?
His closest
comparison is Chance Adams. How'd that work out? Clark Schmidt might be the goods, but Clark Schmidt lost his entire rookie year to Tommy John surgery. So he's a little behind the eight ball. If he can make it up, maybe he makes it up, but he won't be up until June, July. Look, we could have this conversation all day. I think Brian Cashman has done a shit job. Sorry, I know I cursed this time, but that I needed to put an emphasis on the kind of job I think he's done. And I think it's unforgivable, in my opinion. I really do. I don't like being played for a sucker. They played us for a sucker this offseason.
There you have it, listeners. We got his opinion and in his rant all in one. And with that being said, listeners, that brings us to the close of this week's show. Me and Mad Mike want to thank our producer, A.O. Omar Baker, for rocking out with us. And again, we want to wish Mad Mike's missus a happy birthday. Please, Mad Mike, tell her your show, wishing her a happy birthday, and she has a great day. Listeners, have a safe and blessed week. And me and Mad Mike to see you in 7 days. So, A.O., let's roll, baby.
Okay, that brings our show to a close. Brand new episodes of the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Show, presented by Part of My Fresh Radio, drop every single Monday. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, everywhere that podcasts are available. Make sure you subscribe. Head over to LloydA.Thompson.com with any questions you may have. And, of course, follow at Lloyd A. Thompson on IG and on Twitter. Head over to PartOfMyFresh.com. Check out all of the podcasts that we have. And, of course, we'll catch y'all in 7 days. Once again, make sure you subscribe. Tell a friend to tell a friend. It's the Lloyd A. Thompson, the Mad Mike Sports Show, every Monday. Peace.